Did you know that collagen makes up 30% of the protein in your body? It's the substance that gives structure, support, and strength to your skin, muscles, bones, and connective tissues. Collagen is what keeps our skin firm and youthful, preventing it from sagging. It also supplies amino acids that are crucial for building healthy hair and protecting hair follicles. The collagen supplement that I use and recommend to my patients is Revive by Bright Core Nutrition. Revive combines five types of collagen with hyaluronic acid and biotin to heal and nourish your skin, hair, and nails. Studies show that collagen also helps relieve joint inflammation and pain. If you're looking to heal your body from the inside out and reverse some effects of aging, Revive could be your answer. For more information and to order, visit mybrightcore.com/Hoffman. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman or call 888-592-9909. That's 888-592-9909. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, buy two bottles of Revive and get one free, plus a collagen sheet mask as a free gift. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman for Revive Multi-Collagen Protein. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's subject, I think, is somewhat unique for Intelligent Medicine. We often talk about lifestyle issues like diet, nutritional supplements. We talk about high-tech medical innovations. Today, we're going to talk about the subject of toxic productivity. That's the title of a book by today's guest, Isra Nasir. She's author of Toxic Productivity, Reclaim Your Time and Emotional Energy in a World That Always Demands More. Now, I must admit that my scheduling this podcast is both a service to you, my Intelligent Medicine listeners, but also, on a personal note, sort of a tonic or an antidote to my personal inclination, perhaps, to toxic productivity, because after all, I'm kind of a high-powered professional. As a medical doctor, productivity was the name of the game. To get good grades, to get into a good college, to get into a good medical school, to get a good medical residency, and then to begin a career in medicine, it's a go, go, go profession. And I think that may resonate for many of you out there, my discerning listeners, who are driven to increase levels of accomplishment and productivity. And so it's with great pleasure that I start this conversation with Isra Nasir. She is a New York City-based psychotherapist, writer, and the founder of something called WellGuide. It's a digital community for mental health awareness. And she's been interviewed in places like Vogue, Associated Press. She's been invited to speak at corporations such as Google, Meta, and Yale University. And as a potential antidote to the toxic productivity that drives burnout in those organizations. So welcome, Isra. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for that intro and the background on me. I'm actually very excited to chat with you because this is almost like a merger of like medical and mental health, which I think is an important conversation to have.
Well, absolutely. Because I think, you know, we tend to be very much on a material plane when we talk about medicine, we talk about drugs, we talk about, you know, then we talk about lifestyle, but in terms of diet and exercise. But too often we ignore the mental or spiritual dimension of health, which I think your book speaks to. So first of all, perhaps provide us with a definition of toxic productivity.
Toxic productivity is a mindset that we develop over time. And in it, we believe that we are only as valuable as the outcomes of our. And the pursuit for those achievements becomes primary. Oftentimes, the achievements we are pursuing are unintentional. So they're inherited, they're comparative, somebody has told us we should do it, or we feel like we must do it. And in the pursuit of achievement, our other important like domains of life become secondary, right? So relationships, health, wellness, resting, joy, creativity, all of that becomes secondary because you just want to get that achievement. So in toxic productivity, your productivity becomes a central core of your life.
In some ways, this parallels some of the definitions of addiction, because addiction is an inclination to a substance or a pattern of behavior, in some cases, which interferes with your daily functioning and your relationships. And so is there some concordance between toxic productivity and workaholism?
Yeah, so like being addicted to work or being a workaholic is one of the vehicles within which like toxic productivity operates, right? People who become workaholics are often not just pursuing money, like they are getting something else out of it at like a more deeper emotional core level. And that's really what's happening with toxic productivity, which is like, that's when productivity becomes unhealthy. When you start using your productivity, your outcomes, your achievements as coping tools for uncomfortable emotions, which is, you're right, similar to substance use, in that substances are being used to cope. And, you know, I've definitely read some research around like a mild addiction to stress hormones. And that definitely plays into it as well. The more dysregulated, overwhelmed, overcommitted we are, the more we feel like we are achieving something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because we can moderate sometimes certain behaviors, you know, like occasionally, you know, smoke a joint, have a drink, you know, engage in something that has the potential to become addictive, but kind of keeping it under wraps. But then when it becomes all consuming, like gambling, you know, it's nice to go to Vegas, maybe, you know, play the roulette wheel or whatever, blackjack. But when it becomes all consuming and it interferes with relationships and daily life, then it becomes, quote, toxic.
Yes, that would be correct. And, you know, productivity is a really important part of society. Productivity is a really important part of ourselves. That's how we grow. That's how we develop, right? That's how we move from one phase of life to the other. And so, you know, a lot of people sometimes misunderstand that this is an anti-productivity book. And it's not. I think my aim is that this becomes a place where people start to develop sustainable productivity habits so we can just be productive for longer. In the intro, you were talking about medicine being a field that like really requires you to be productive, right? And on the flip side of that, if you look at clinician burnout and suicide rates, they're also very high.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be remiss to think that those things are not connected.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, you know, we even enshrine productivity as a national goal. We have the GNP, gross national product, and it's supposed to increase by, you know, a significant percentage each year. And if it doesn't, then we're somehow remiss as a nation. And then, of course, on an industrial level, you know, productivity is all important. That's what managers try to do. They try to enhance, quote, productivity. So how do we maintain productivity, but at the same time check our impulse to veer into toxic productivity?
It's really important to understand the intention behind your productivity. So a lot of times people do things for the sake of doing them, and that takes up their time and their energy. And so they feel stretched too thin because they're giving like an equal amount of energy, effort, and resource to everything. And so one of the ways to really maintain this is to be very intentional about what you're desiring, why you're desiring it, like definitely questioning yourself and understanding your intention. That's really important in a way to kind of like create boundaries so that you are not just doing, you know, everything for the sake of doing it. I think another is emotional regulation. A lot of people don't know how to manage difficult emotions, so they react, and that reactivity is doing something. It's like in some kind of movement. So if you're feeling guilty about something, you're going to get up and say, oh, maybe I'll just check some emails this Sunday morning. I'll just do a quick check-in, or, you know. So a lot of times we use productivity as a way to soothe difficult emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So emotional regulation is really important. A really good example is one of the hallmarks of toxic productivity is overcommitting. So you're just saying yes to a lot of things without really reflecting on if you have the time or energy. And a lot of times people overcommit because they're uncomfortable in saying no.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't sit with that discomfort. They can't sit with the discomfort of potentially disappointing someone. And so they just say yes. And I think the key to sustainable productivity is, you know, one of it for sure is emotional regulation.
So is it a boundary issue, or is it perhaps an issue of self-esteem that constantly people have to prove themselves worthy because you're not okay unless you are accomplishing a lot?
Yeah. You can't have boundary issues without having issues with self-esteem or self-worth. So at the foundation, there's a lot of like self-doubt around my value, who I am, will people love me, will I be accepted? So there's a lot of this like self-worth, I guess like turbulence, if you will, or low self-worth. And that manifests as an inability to set boundaries because there's a fear that you're going to get rejected or the opportunity will never come to you again. And so these things are like, you know, I talk about them as though they're so discrete, but the reality is like they're kind of parallel processes running at the same time.
So the flip side of this is, are we trying to pathologize excellence, you know, the strivers, the geniuses, the captains of industry, the extraordinarily energetic people who drive innovation? Are we perhaps leveling the playing field and making sure that everyone is chill and perhaps not reaching their highest potential?
That is a very interesting point. And it speaks, your question speaks to this mindset that you have to be extraordinary, right? And everything has to be extraordinary. And I think that's causing a lot of disillusionment amongst a specific generation, specifically like millennials and older Gen Z, because like, you know, now they're aging out into management and leadership and all of that, academia. And the truth is, not everything can be extraordinary and not everyone can be excellent, right? So it's really important, again, to be intentional about what you're pursuing, why you're pursuing it, and what the goal is at the end. And if you do look at the people who are extraordinary change makers, those who have kind of lived a full life, often in their later years, talk about the cost that they paid on their health. And a really great example of this, Arianna Huffington. She very openly talks about the extreme burnout, like actually at a physiological level that she experienced where she blacked out in her office. And she hit her head on a chair and split her face open. And that was like a wake up call for her. And you'll see it in like, you know, other CEOs who end up getting heart disease much earlier. And so, again, the message is not don't be productive, don't strive for things. The message is be intentional in what you are striving for and do it in a way that's sustainable so it can be long lasting.
So how has your own personal experience influenced your writing to Toxic Productivity? Because you're no slouch. You're a very accomplished young professional and you've reached a very high level of attainment with, you know, your involvement with, you know, corporate counseling. Academic speakerships, and now, you know, with a wonderful book. How have you dealt with this? I mean, obviously, you know, your academic background is strong. You know, you got the good grades, you got into the good schools. How has this impacted you personally?
The way it impacted me at a personal level is that my achievements were not giving me any joy. And that's a really big hallmark. I spent my 20s like sowing the seeds, if you will, right? Like, and you think you're just going to do. And when you're in your 20s, you do feel like you have this like infinite pool of energy. And so, you know, by the time I hit my early 30s and I was getting the return of all of the stuff that I had worked so hard for, there was like this feeling that I was waiting for. I was waiting for this feeling of like, I've arrived. Like, I got this. I did this. Like, now I can move on to feeling a little bit free or you know, less burdened by the pressures of being exceptional Because like, you know, I was raised like that. I was raised to believe that I will leave some kind of impact on the world and that I'm going to do great things. And it is a meritocracy. The harder you work, the more you're going to get, which we all know is not true, right? So people are caught in this like double bind, because you could be exceptionally hardworking and you could just work to the bone, but somebody else might get the opportunity because they know somebody, right? And so that does happen. And I think that's why it's so important to not anchor your self-worth in what you do. I think it's still okay to pursue stuff, but you, how you feel about yourself should not be connected. And I think that's what was happening with me. I was feeling disillusioned, disengaged, disconnected. My life felt very blah. Like, there's just no other word for it. On the outside, everybody was like, oh my gosh, your life is so cool. Like, you do all these things. It must be so great. You must be so proud of yourself. But how I felt about myself, what I was saying to myself, was so different. And I genuinely at one point considered whether I was depressed or not, because I was like, why not more engaged in my life? Right. And so I did an assessment and I didn't meet the criteria. And I kind of talked to a couple of my therapist friends and eventually my own therapist. Like, it wasn't that. It wasn't depression. I was not a high functioning depressive. So that to me was a big sign that something needed to change in my life, because how can I be feeling this way? Like, there needs to be something that needs to change. And it was that. I was pouring myself into my outcomes.
So does that mean adopting a kind of a less is more mentality with more emphasis on work-life balance for personal satisfaction?
It actually, for me, means adopting a prioritization mentality and really understanding which of the things require this percentage of my energy versus a full percentage of my energy. Like, where am I putting all of my resources in terms of getting a return out of it, right? I think that is the mindset that I adopted. And it's also the mindset of cultivating a little bit more of a diverse life. When we are stuck in productivity mindset and the toxic productivity mindset, the core central theme of our life becomes productivity. And it can be applied to any domain, right? It could be your work, your relationships, your personal growth. But what happens is you only do things in the pursuit of getting that achievement. And it's really important to understand that we are dynamic people. We are, you know, multifaceted beings. We have curiosity and art at our disposal. And so I think having that diversity in your life is really important. So, I mean, I think like maybe you could call that work-life balance, but I think it's a little bit more than that. It's actually also prioritizing a diversity of experiences that you do, because I think that makes you just like a more holistic person.
We tend to think of toxic productivity in terms of a career or work-related accomplishments, but can toxic productivity extend to experiences like, you know, I've gone to, you know, 14 rock concerts this year, and I've visited 11 countries, and I've, you know, cycled, 24 peaks in 6 different continents. Can it be along those lines too?
Absolutely. It can be applied to, it's a mindset, right? So it can be applied to anything that you then start measuring. People have brought this mindset into biohacking, measuring their body, fertility, right? Well, assessment of, you know, ovary health, like how many eggs you have viable. And so
to the sleep realm, you know, like people are wearing Aura watches, yeah. And it's like, did I have the optimal amount of sleep, and is it great sleep quality, and what's my sleep score from last night?
Yeah. So dating, romantic relationships, anything that put a timeline that we can measure, you can then fall into comparison, guilt, shame, and criticizing yourself. And all of that drives you to do more, and sometimes unintentionally more. Like, a great example of this is self-care, right? Self-care is an extremely overused term, billions of dollars worth of industry right now behind it. And people are forcing themselves to do stuff that doesn't feel good, right? Like waking up early, drinking this, doing that. Like, just like, I know people who have like 14 things they do in the morning, like literally before the workday has even begun, measuring everything they're eating. And like, so essentially you have now lost the essence of self-care. because you're shaming yourself, you're beating yourself up, you're putting pressure on yourself, you're trying to excel, you're sharing it with other people. And so now it's not self-care, right? You're not caring for yourself anymore. And I think it's really important that we take a step back and reflect on those things.
We sometimes apply a term to excessively fastidious eating, which is orthorexia, eating in a very prescribed way so that you don't have a single dollop of carbohydrate or that you avoid seed oils at all costs. And this sometimes, I think, erodes the quality of life and, you know, one sense of personal freedom.
Yeah. And that's like a fairly new term. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, it's actually been, it was coined, I believe, in the 1980s, but it still has legs.
What I mean, I think it's reflective.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's right. In human history, it is a relatively new term. Yes.
It's like once we realized we could measure stuff, like, yo, let's make a game out of it, right? And it's not healthy at all.
Indeed. Yeah. So can you give us some examples? Because you work with clients of, you know, people who come to you. You know, now you have a reputation as someone who deals with issues around, you know, compulsive work habits, compulsive leisure habits, toxic productivity. Can you share some anecdotes about how you've worked with them to overcome that?
Absolutely. So essentially, you have two types of people who come into therapy. One who are emotionally aware, they're kind of already connected. And with them, you can kind of like go into like understanding the emotional roots of their compulsive behavior. Like they have a little bit of awareness, they're ready for it. And there we kind of start the exploration between like, why do you do the things you do? What makes you feel good? Why do you keep doing this thing if it consistently makes you feel bad, right? Like, why do you keep saying yes to this, even though you know immediately that it makes you feel worse about yourself? So you got to do this like exploration first, and then you pull themes. So that people can understand where this behavior is coming from. And I mean, I talked about overcommitting as an example. Some people overcommit because they have a hard time saying no. Some people overcommit because they have a fear of missing out. They have like this anxiety
FOMO.
That they're going to go.
Yeah.
FOMO. Some people say no, have a hard time saying no because they're afraid of disappointing other people. Their reputation is very important to them. I think getting to the root is really necessary. And then
sometimes parental expectations are also figure into that big time, right?
Oh my gosh, huge. I can't believe I forgot about that. Yeah, absolutely. The way your parents have kind of built in this foundation is, sometimes it's unintentional, is really important.
I remember, just as an anecdote on a personal level, I remember my mother's dying words to me, and actually spoke to her on the telephone because I wasn't present. I was in New York on a plane ready to fly out because I heard that her health was declining. And at that point, she had kind of become incoherent. She was speaking in garbled sentences in various incomprehensible foreign languages. And her final words to me were, you know, I get a little choked up saying this, "Ron, do the best you can." And at one level, you could think of this as an invitation to toxic productivity, but I found it a very merciful statement because it's do the best you can. It doesn't mean infinite striving towards accomplishment. And she was big on my accomplishments, but it was do the best you can. So within the constraints of what you can, and I just, you know, take it with me as a very important sharing.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. And I would even extend that a little bit more. It's also do the best you can. Not another person, not somebody who has a different skill set, right? Like that's the difference between like excellence and perfection. Perfection is when we are measuring against an ideal, and excellenceism is when you know your own structure, framework, limitations, skills, what you're capable of doing, what you're not, and operating within that. So I do feel like doing the best you can is actually not, to me, that's not an invitation to toxic productivity. Because for me, it's like, it's about me and my skills, not other people. But thank you for sharing that. But to answer the question previously about how to work with people, there's a subset of people who come in and they are not emotionally aware. Like somebody told them to come to therapy, or they're like, something doesn't feel right. I don't know what it is. Like, I have these benefits. I might as well check it out.
But the biggest challenge to a therapist, people who are really not in touch, maybe not that insightful.
Yeah. Or, you know, they're kind of like, are a little guarded coming in. I think with those people, it's much easier to get in through like physical symptoms and behavioral change, because people are not ready to talk about emotions. Someone might not be ready to talk about shame. They might have never even thought they have shame. Maybe it was suppressed, right? So you start doing very like observational work, and you start bringing insight into their routine, their habit, their, you're not asking the, like, I'm not asking the questions of how does this make you feel, but it's more like, you know, you do these things, like, where did you learn to do this? Right? You're trying to build insight on their routine. And that then eventually opens the door to them reflecting on their habit.
Do people achieve success in overcoming this just very powerful impulse towards doing things and accomplishing things all the time?
It's a very challenging thing, because not only do our families support it, our academic system supports it.
It's just amazing.
Yeah. And community, like the world. So I think the mindset I take on this is not that we want, like, it's not about like overcoming all of it and never feeling it again, because that will set somebody else, up to fail, right? Because we evolve, seasons change, our own like emotional resilience goes up and down. So what I like to think of it as is, am I becoming healthier than I was the last time I struggled with this? Like, am I making better choices bit by bit every day? And you might never come to a state of healing and just stay there, because that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. But if you are just slightly 1%, 2% making better choices.
Incremental gains.
Yeah. It really is. I feel like that's the mindset we should take. And that's how I am. I definitely struggle with this, you know, and I still struggle with it. And I feel so much more in control than I used to before when I do struggle with this, you know?
So the writing the book and delving into this issue has been personally liberating for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I learned so much in the research and the literature and talking to people. It was very enlightening.
Good stuff. Right. Good point at which to pause, because we divide our podcast into two parts. We're going to share more on the subject of toxic productivity. That's a book by today's guest, Isrin Nasir. Her last name is spelled Nasir. Toxic Productivity, Reclaim Your Time and Emotional Energy in a World That Always Demands More. And do you have a website, Isra?
Yes. So it's my full name, isranasir.com. And right on the main page, there's a button that says book. So if you want to learn anything more about it, it's going to be there.
Or Google Toxic Productivity. Great title. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We'll be right back with more. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.